From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's now been 2 days since President Trump assumed office for his second term. Here in Illinois, a blue state that Trump and his top aides have said they plan to target, officials are still watching and waiting for what's to come. That includes Governor J.B. Pritzker. A Democrat midway through his second term, Pritzker is widely presumed to have ambitions for national office himself. He raised his profile around the Democratic National Convention last year and was reportedly on former Vice President Kamala Harris's shortlist for running mates. It's been a long time since we've spoken with Pritzker on this show. Because of his schedule, his office offered 30 minutes with him yesterday afternoon, though as you'll hear, we did not get that full time. Because today's show is pre-recorded, we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org.
Brian Mackey, as I live and breathe.
Governor Pritzker, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So President Trump has been back in office about 30 hours as we are taping. There's been a lot of noise, you know, speeches, executive orders, memoranda. What do you make of where we are now?
Well, unfortunately, it appears that it's what we had expected, which is his first actions are causing chaos and confusion. Some of the executive orders that he has issued appear to violate the rule of law. I'm deeply concerned because, look, my job is to make sure that we're managing the state of Illinois properly, that we're protecting the people of the state of Illinois, and that the federal government is, working to advance our cause. And that all seems in jeopardy with this administration just 24 hours in.
You were previously governor for 2 years during the first Trump administration. What lessons did you take from that time about how to approach your job now?
Well, I will say that, you know, when I first came into office, although I was, you know, in deep disagreement with President Trump, I had hoped that there would be areas that we might work together. And when I felt like we needed to, I reached out. But a lot of that came at the beginning of the pandemic, when we really needed the federal government to step up, and they didn't. So from that moment to the end of his term, there was, again, chaos, no help. And the President Trump really was operating in ways that were working against the people of Illinois. So, if I learned a lesson, it's even though you hope that the other party has good intentions, maybe they don't. And there may be help at the federal government level, but this president doesn't seem to know how to do that or have any interest in doing that. It's about him. It's about his family. It's about making money for his friends and not carrying out policies that actually help working families.
Now, I'm sure you have been following all the many executive orders that have come down. We have all been speculating for months about what exactly the administration would do. And I want to talk through some of those possibilities because we, on the 21st show, we have talked to a lot of nonprofit groups, people in government, people outside of government, and how they have been thinking about some of these things. One of these areas is immigration, asylum, people who are migrants. I know you've seen the reporting that Chicago would be among the first places targeted for some of these deportations. What do you know about that?
Well, not much, because I've heard not at all from the administration. You would think that, if they're planning to do something in Chicago or in the state of Illinois, that they would contact local authorities, state authorities, and coordinate, or at least tell us what they're doing. They've done none of that. So we're guessing based upon the information that we hear, but it's not from the Trump administration or the federal government, unfortunately.
As you know, we have the Trust Act here. Illinois is, a self-described sanctuary state. Law enforcement is not supposed to cooperate with the federal government. How do you make sure that that's the case, that there's not some, so-called constitutional sheriff somewhere who takes it upon himself to do what he thinks is the right thing.
Well, it's hard in advance to stop someone from breaking the law. And a sheriff or a local law enforcement official who decides to break Illinois law, we wouldn't know until afterwards. So that is a very unfortunate fact. But the attorney general has the ability to, you know, take some enforcement action. We obviously have a certification of law enforcement officers in the state of Illinois, so it could become part of their record. But I expect that law enforcement will do what they're being asked to do, what they're by law required to do. And I also know that there are, you know, we've done a lot here in advance to make sure that we're providing information so that people know their rights if they are approached by law enforcement about their documentation. And they know that if they have children, for example, that there are and they are detained or arrested by federal officials, they want to protect their children, and they have the ability under Illinois law to get a guardian to care for their child when something like this happens. It can become automatic. So we've done a lot here in the state to make it safer for, again, law-abiding immigrants to this state, including those who may be undocumented. I want to remind you that so many people who are undocumented in this state, in fact, the vast, vast majority, are hardworking people holding down jobs, paying taxes. They don't actually draw on the services that their taxes pay for because they're afraid to do that, to reveal their names. But they're often the anchors of their communities. They're good people who are good neighbors to the people they live near. And I think we should all recognize that the violent criminals who are convicted of crimes and have no documentation are, in fact, by federal law, required to be deported. And we want them deported. I do not want them in the state of Illinois. We do not want them in the United States of America.
There is a lot of rumor going around about this, people thinking they're seeing ICE. Maybe they haven't. How do you deal with that sort of fear? I also saw reporting that some kids were afraid to go to school because they didn't want to come home and find that their parents were gone. How do you deal with that sort of fear that's out there?
It's unfortunate that this is actually what the administration intends. They are trying to strike fear into people. And the effect of that, of course, is that people won't be keeping their jobs. They will stay home. I've seen, for example, in Little Village and Pilsen in Chicago just 2 days ago, as I walked around to various businesses, they were feeling the pinch of this because so many people, whether they're documented immigrants, citizens, or undocumented, were not patronizing those locations because they didn't want to have their families targeted or they themselves targeted. And so the economic impact on those areas of Chicago is real. And that, unfortunately, is what the Trump administration seems to be all about.
One of the other areas that the Trump administration talked a lot about are DEI initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And one of the things we've seen so far, executive orders about the Department of Education, for example. The Department of Ed provides a lot of money to schools in Illinois, as well as obviously every other state in the country. Let's say they do, you know, were to restructure their funding, so prioritize schools that de-emphasize, you know, education on race or human sexuality or LGBT rights. How do you think through those possibilities and, you know, whether Illinois could make up that shortfall or would have to change its policies in response to what the feds are pushing?
You know, what they're doing is dangerous for the future of our country. Let me be clear that it's important for kids, for example, to learn about Black history, to understand the challenges that other groups go through and their own communities have gone through for the last 250 years. And this Department of Education seems to, and we're only a day in, so we'll see, but it seems like what they're aiming to do is to whitewash history to take those things out so that people can't learn about them, even though it's an important part of who they are. I can say, you know, as somebody who's Jewish, it's been very important in my life to know the history of the, you know, of where I came from and the people that came before me and the challenges that people have faced in the Holocaust, for example, and so many circumstances that have led people, you know, in my community to the situations that they, you know, may have ended up in. And so I can understand that, you know, we need to make sure that people know where they came from and what's happened over time in the United States. And by the way, this is how you make progress, learning from the mistakes of the past. The United States has not done it right all the time, but we do get it right. You know, the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice. I really believe that. It happens over time, but you've got to know your history in order not to repeat it.
One of the other groups that's feeling quite persecuted now are people who are transgender. We actually got a text message. We asked some of our listeners if they had questions for you ahead of this conversation. And I should add, just as preliminary, this is a tiny share of the U.S. population, less than 1%, depending on which study you look at, maybe as much as 1.5%. But Republicans have put a lot of energy into campaign messaging around this group, and is one of the first actions of the Trump administration yesterday. It declared that there shall only be male and female sex as at conception, which some people say is, you know, a way of looking at saying that for federal documentation purposes, trans people don't exist, non-binary people don't exist. So that leads me to the question from Heather in Mount Zion, who wants to know, how will the governor continue to protect transgender individuals in the state with changing federal regulations?
Well, we recognize that there are transgender people in this state and that their rights need to be protected. Indeed, I have continued over the course of 6 years in office to protect the LGBTQ community and more broadly, you know, communities that are too often discriminated against. So I'll do everything that's within my power and have proven that I will to make sure that people are treated like human beings, that there is equality from one human being to another human being, whatever label someone at the federal government level wants to put on them for the next 4 years. I think it's awful what the federal government is attempting to do. But we have state laws that protect people. And to the extent there are federal laws that supersede those, again, we're going to fight tooth and nail in this state to uphold the values of the people of Illinois, which are about protecting each other.
What do you say to the Democrats who say that this has become a, you know, regardless of the correct moral position here that the Democrats see, it's become a messaging problem for them? And, I will acknowledge, I think, as a matter of reality, that not a lot of Democrats campaign on these issues, but Republicans do. And maybe Democrats were not as responsive to the, you know, hundreds of thousands of or however many it was ads that were run during this last campaign cycle. How do you think about messaging around issues like this?
It's funny. I think you're 100% right that and I think the implication of your question is Republicans have successfully gotten many Democrats to sort of back into a corner and start talking about some very, very small issue that actually doesn't affect very many people, except that other people who hear about it they're not interested in it, or they think that it's, that the decision you made about this very small issue is wrong. But it may be a matter of standing up for somebody's individual rights. And I do think Democrats don't, you know, we too often Democrats take the bait on these things. And I don't think we should. There's so many things that Republicans are doing that, frankly, I think are unpatriotic, anti-American, against that arc of the moral universe bending toward justice that we believe in as Democrats. And so I think we need to put it to them. We need to be more aggressive about our messaging about the terrible things that Republicans are attempting to do to this country to take us backward.
Okay, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guest, who is Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat midway through his second term. I spoke with him yesterday afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, in order to accommodate his schedule. We're going to hear the rest of the conversation after a short break. I do want to mention we asked members of our texting group, which you can join by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We asked them if they had questions for the governor. We heard one of those during the last segment. We also got voicemails from some of you.
Hi, this is Christina from Springfield. I heard that you're going to have JB on Wednesday. I would just like to say that I love him. I'm so lucky to be in a state with a governor that is more presidential than my actual president. I'm glad that he's a resistor, and I hope he continues to resist this, unprecedented threat to democracy. And I hope that he helps to build the foundation for Democrats in these red states that we're going to need to build so that we can have a Project 2037 and combat this Project 2025 junk. They've been working on it for 60 years. I hope that we start to work on it and we have strong leaders like JB at the helm.
Thank you for that message. If you want to join our texting group, text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. More to come after a break. It's the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to get back to my interview with Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker in a moment, but I want to take a minute to pull back the curtain on how these interviews work. We've been trying off and on to get the governor on the show for a long time now. We asked during the legislative session last year. We asked over the summer around the DNC in Chicago. We asked in the fall and at the end of the year. Although we try to go live when we can so you can call in with your questions, public officials often say the live show time doesn't work with their schedule. So when the governor's press secretary said he could do 30 minutes yesterday afternoon, we took it. But as you'll hear, about 22, 23 minutes into our conversation, an aide chimed in to say, last question. I mentioned this to say there were a number of listener questions you sent in by text or voicemail that we didn't get to ask. Frankly, if I'd known the interview was going to be cut short, I might have structured it differently. I still think it's a worthwhile conversation, but for the sake of transparency, and especially for those of you who took the time to write in with questions, I wanted to explain what happened. All right, before the break, the governor and I were talking about how he and other Democrats are thinking about communicating with voters in light of the new Trump administration. You're getting at one of the points I've been thinking a lot about as how to approach my job as a reporter in this time. And I've been thinking about this quote from Kevin Kelly, who's the internet writer and thinker. He founded Wired magazine. He has this saying, you don't have to attend every argument you're invited to. So how are you thinking about picking your spots in the days, weeks, and months ahead?
Well, I guess I don't think of it that way. I don't think about picking spots. My job is to competently run this state, to be compassionate about how we approach the challenges that people face in Illinois, and very importantly, to lift up working families who too often are left out and left behind. And so I guess I'm not picking political spots. I'm more, trying to fight every day. I think you've seen for six.
Well, I guess I don't mean to cut you off. I just say, what do you react to? Can you possibly react to everything the administration is putting out?
Well, when you say react, there's some things that they put out specifically just to get reaction. Mm. It isn't really about a policy. And then other things that are very dangerous that need to be immediately acted upon. For example, getting rid of birthright citizenship in this country. You have no idea. I mean, there are people in this in the Trump administration who would be considered non-citizens under this very order. Birthright citizenship is in the Constitution. It would be unconstitutional for me to follow it, for them to follow it. The proposal of it is dangerous. And, the result is that we have to take them to court. And that's exactly what our Attorney General, Kwame Raoul, and 17 other attorneys general did today.
All right, Let's talk about another area of federal funding that could be potentially very consequential for the state of Illinois, and that is the Medicaid program, the system of health care for the poor, elderly, and disabled. It is run by individual states. It's funded by the federal government. Illinois is with the majority of states that extended coverage to adults who don't have children. This was through the Affordable Care Act. But Kaiser Health News has reported that Illinois is one of 11 states with a trigger law that could potentially end that coverage or reduce that coverage if federal funding is cut. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people here. How are you thinking about this? How is your administration potentially planning for this? As we have seen that Republicans say they are looking at making some significant cuts to Medicaid.
Yeah. Let me begin by saying that just to maybe correct the information. Yeah. Half of Medicaid roughly is paid for by the federal government. The other half is paid for by the state. And it's been a hugely successful program for all the years that it's been in existence. There are so many people who otherwise wouldn't have any health care if we didn't have a program like Medicaid. Now, if the Trump administration, and let's be honest, they've been trying to cut Medicaid since he was in office last time. They wanted to get rid of Obamacare. They still do, although now they're cloaking it in, in trying to save money in the, DOGE department. But the fact is that if the federal government decides not to fund some portion of Medicaid, there is no chance that the state of Illinois has enough money to cover the other half of the cost. We're talking about billions of dollars. So that is on the Trump administration. If they want to throw people off health care, I think they're going to find that many of the people that supported them are the very people that they will be hurting.
Brian, we got time for one more.
One more. Oh, I thought we had 30 minutes. Okay. Let me prioritize. Vice President Kamala Harris got 300,000 fewer votes in Illinois than Joe Biden did in 2020. Trump's total number of votes was essentially unchanged across those two elections. To what do you attribute that difference? What does that say about Democrats that they performed less well than they've done in the past, not only in Illinois, but in New Jersey, in New York, in places where they have traditionally been strong?
Well, it was a highly unusual election. And I just want to point out that, we had an incumbent president who decided to run for re-election. And then after all the primaries were over, so nobody else could run, decided not to run for re-election. And then his vice president was chosen. And frankly, she was not well known, just not. And I can tell you from personal experience, having run for governor in a primary and being far behind to begin with in that primary, that running a primary is vitally important to help you get to know people across the state and let them get to know you. And I don't think in 108 days that can be done, especially in a presidential election as big as our country is, by a nominee. So honestly, I think it was time. I think it was the circumstances. That won't happen again, in my view. I can't imagine. It hasn't happened before in my lifetime the way that it happened in 2024. So I can't imagine that it'll happen again. From my perspective, remember, Democrats won all the way down the ticket underneath that top level. We won races for coroner. We won races for state's attorney. We won races for county board and more than Republicans did.
All right. What sort of person are you looking to lead the Democratic Party into the next, into the future?
This will be our last question, but I believe that we need, as a party leader, someone who really knows how to build a party. And that means someone who's a technician, who has actually done get out the vote campaigns, who knows how to put lists together and communicate with people online and offline. It's very important that we have somebody who really knows how to build a party. We do not necessarily need somebody who's just really good on the Sunday talk shows. And that's what I'm hoping to see for a chairman of the National Democratic Party.
All right. Thanks, Brian. We got to get him to his next thing. We appreciate it.
All right. Governor Pritzker, thank you for being with us.
Brian, thank you very much.
There you have it. My conversation with Governor J.B. Pritzker, recorded Tuesday afternoon. Let me know what you thought about the conversation itself, about letting you see behind the curtain how this really works. I'm curious what you think about that. Talk at 21stshow.org is the address. Talk at 21stshow.org.